Hello, 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 and welcome to the Loudcast number 5. This is your host, Kevin McLean. I am here, as always, with my wonderful producer, Mark Galley, and we've got a special guest for us today, but before we get to that, I'm going to catch you up on what's been going on since our last Loudcast. So, the gang went out to Dublin, we went for Burns, we went out to do a gig with the Scottish Government Hub in Ireland. It was so much fun. We'd never been to Dublin before. Kate had, but I'd never been over, and not to gig, certainly. So it was really cool to be at such an amazing gig. There was some high-profile guests. The Scottish Culture Minister was there, Fiona Hislop, which was really cool. She came up and said some nice things about the poems that we did and got a wee photo with us. That was a weird request from someone who I imagine is more used to getting the requests. It was really surreal. It was nice. We did the sort of show alongside dinner. So we were doing poems kind of in between courses, which was quite fun. But there was a really receptive audience. And near the end of the show, we actually found out Marie Heaney was there, who is the widow of Seamus Heaney, who is like one of the most celebrated Irish poets ever. And someone out of my youth that I remember from poetry. I wasn't a huge poetry fan in high school, but I remember reading Seamus's stuff and being blown away. And so we got introduced to his widow, which was a kind of surreal moment. And that day, the director of the Scottish Poetry Library had found a poem that she had thought had been lost of Seamus's and brought it in this book. It's called A Burl for Burns. And so she was showing us this poem, and she decided at that moment that we should read it for her, which was a terrifying request that was impossible to turn down. So I ended up reading the last poem of the night, which was A Burl for Burns. So my first ever gig in Ireland, I was reading a poem by one of the most celebrated Irish poets to his widow about Burns on Burns Night. So it was no pressure. Luckily for Burns Night, they had laid on plenty of whiskey and beer for us to consume. So that was all good. So we had a good trip for that. We came back and we got stuck into our monthly nights. We had a really good night at the Scottish Storytelling Centre, which is where we are filming this podcast once again. We are in the beautiful Netherbow Theatre. So a big thank you to the Scottish Storytelling Centre for letting us use that. We had a really good show, and we have another one coming up on the 15th of this month. So we're going to have an incredible lineup. It is Casey Bailey, Angie Strachan, Catherine McFarlane, and Colin Maguire, which is just going to be stellar. So if you are in Edinburgh for the 15th of March, please come along and check out Loud Poets at the Scottish Storytelling Centre. We had a lot going on this month, actually. We also announced our rebrand. So for the last sort of 5 years, we have been Loud Poets. And while slowly we've been doing other stuff, we've kind of kept that name. Whereas now we think, you know, with things like this, the Loudcast and all the film work we're doing with Perry, and, you know, we've piloted some comedy nights and things like that, we've decided to kind of rebrand and get things a bit more formally organized, actually, you know, tick the boxes and do the forms that the government will probably eventually come asking us for. So we decided to do that. And so we've launched a brand new company called I Am Loud Productions, because, you know, I can't be quiet. So we've went with that, and it's really exciting to kind of announce this new chapter. And we're going to have loads coming up over the next year as you know, projects kind of become available for us to announce. We've got some cool gigs coming up in June that we were talking to people about our monthly shows. If you do want the inside scoop, best places to come and see us in person. You can also catch us weekly at Bohemia in Edinburgh, which is a beautiful venue, a lovely bar space. They've got this stunning stage above one of their bars that we used to perform on, and we're having a lot of fun putting on an open mic there every week. So if you're interested in trying out spoken word poetry, maybe you've been writing and looking for somewhere to try it out, please do get in touch with us. You can hit us up at hello@iamloud.co, or you can find us on social media at I Am Loud Pro, or just searching I Am Loud, Loud Poets, anything like that, you'll find us. And every week at those Bohemia events, we have an incredible feature artist who comes along. I was very pleased to be asked by Mark, our producer, who's producing, hosting, and booking these shows for us, to do the first one. And today we have a guest on the Loudcast who was our most recent feature, Bohemia, and we booked him because we are absolutely blown away by the work he's been putting out in the scene. He has an incredible show that he'll be putting on this month on the 29th of March at the Scottish Storytelling Centre. So if you want to get your tickets, I know they are selling, so make sure you get one quick and get along to see the Space Gecko Project, because it is phenomenal. And the man behind it is with us here today. He is Stuart Kenny, a creative writer, spoken word artist, journalist, punsmith, and all-round wholesome character. Welcome to the Loudcast, Stuart.
Yes, thank you very much, Kevin. Pleasure to be here.
How are you getting on?
I'm very well, thanks. Yeah, just enjoying being in this space. It's
so pretty,
isn't
it?
Looking forward to the show at the end of the month as well. Just, yeah, such a nice theatre.
We are really lucky. If you've never been to the Scottish Storytelling Centre before, you should absolutely get along and see something here. They have this right on the Royal Mile. It's this beautiful underground 100-seat theatre, and it's just stunning.
Yeah, I always think it's quite amazing that you've got this venue right on the Royal Mile. I think it almost makes it easier, I found, to sell my tickets for the Space Gecko Project when I appeal to you, it's on the Royal Mile. That makes it sound somewhat like legitimate. Yeah, exactly.
I notice it all the time during the Fringe. It's really helpful because I stand on the Royal Mile and I can point at the building.
Exactly.
You have no idea how much easier it is to convince people to come to see your show if you can see the building from where you're talking to
them. Yeah, so. I think especially like non-poetry friends are normally expecting, quite rightly perhaps, some kind of underground basement when I tell them that I've got a show on.
Most poetry shows do tend to be a bit less flashy than this.
Which in some ways is quite nice. It's like the Neverbow Theatre is very nice. I've wanted to perform here for a long time, because of, especially Geckos, because they have this big projector and we have a lot of nice artwork. Mm. But I do quite love the illegitimacy sometimes of kind of cramming into a small basement somewhere to read out work.
Yeah. Vibe of it.
Yeah. Or in Edinburgh, it's mostly bookshops, which is just quite nice anyway.
Yeah, it does lean into the literary side. You can be a bit of a shock if you get up and start shouting poems in a bookshop. I've had some odd looks when I do bookshop gigs. But I first saw Space Gecko Project, which is Stuart's show, which he's been working on. You have some collaborators, right?
Yes. So the Space Gecko Project is basically, it's written and performed by myself with full musical accompaniment from Grant Robertson, who's written all the music himself and plays a good 5 or 6 instruments with the help of a loop pedal in there. And then it's fully illustrated by one of our other friends, Lewis Gillis, who lives in London. And yeah, we're all best friends from high school. So it's
nice. Because I first saw it at the Fringe 2018. And the venue you were in is what you're saying about the more underground kind of, you were in the Banshee
exactly,
Labyrinth.
Exactly, yeah.
Which again, if you've not been, Banshee Labyrinth is kind of the hub of spoken word poetry at the Fringe, especially for the Free Fringe. And they pack in some people into these tiny underground vaults.
Yeah.
How did you find your, it was your first Fringe, right?
It was my first Fringe doing poetry. It was me and Grant's second Fringe. So that first 2017 we did Lifeguards, which was there was one reviewer who came along and came up to us afterwards. He loved it and he said, "That's a brilliant, what it is a comedy duologue." And me and Grant just kind of looked at each other like, never heard those two words before together. But so it's a comedy duologue, apparently. Basically, nice. It was a play about two lifeguards. We were sat on two lifeguard chairs at the end of kind of a long room. All the crowd were all in the pool, was the kind of bit.
Nice.
And it was kind of chatting through life. That was the kind of product of a long joke that me and Grant have had, that one day we would put on a Fringe show called Lifeguards. And then basically on the back of that, it actually went pretty well. We just did 3 dates. So nice. We both work full time, so we just try and do 3 dates, and it was the same with Geckos. But on the back of that, we wanted to do another Fringe show. And basically Grant's in a band, he's a very talented musician. I do a lot of poetry in the poetry scene, obviously, in Edinburgh. So we thought, rather than do the playwright thing, which we have now done once, but previously never before, how about we actually combine the things that we actually do?
Rather than off the back of an
in-joke. Yeah, exactly, yeah. So we kind of, yeah. So then it was our second time doing the Fringe then, first time for poetry, so first time in Banshee. And yeah, it was... I really liked the venue when it gets that, because we managed to fill the room every time.
When I was there, it was packed out, and it does give a nice vibe to it.
It does. It's nice in that way. And so the first show, I think, we had to turn away some people because the guy called us off. What was it? We were quite proud of it. He called us a fire risk, which we kind of put on the rest of our marketing for the... So, yeah, they were kind of unhappy that we had some people in the corridor. But for the last show, we managed to even just get everyone kind of sitting on the floor and stuff inside, like around the seat. So in that kind of space, it was really nice. And I, as I say, there's that really nice intimacy to what is effectively a dungeon, that room, if we're being perfectly honest.
The Banshee Labyrinth comes off very sinister at their points. If you've never been there before,
exactly. It's a bit much. So we got a lot of, got a lot of people along, filled the show, kind of couldn't ask for much more than that. Got a great reception from everyone.
So how do you jump subject wise? Because this is what I find interesting about you. You write a lot of, like, because I've seen you for a while. You've been in the scene now. How long have you?
So I think my first time was December 2016 was when I first started in Edinburgh.
Cool. Because I remember seeing you, I must have, like, quite early on, I think.
Yeah.
And I was blown away just because I think you did like 3 PCs and all of them were so different, like, subject matter wise, which is a thing I try and do in my work, which is hard to do because you want to write about the same things over and over again. But you managed to put that sort of diversification into your work. How do you get from a comedy duologue about lifeguards to Space Gecko, which is a poetry show about an actual space project, right?
Yeah. So, well, I just explain kind of what the Space Gecko project is.
Yeah,
at this
go
point.
For that. Yeah, for those that I'm so committed to the Space Gecko project that I'm forgetting that other people will be like, why do they keep mentioning geckos?
Yeah, so it is like, kind of, I think this is my most said sentence for the past kind of 2 years now. It's probably in 2014, there was a Telegraph article headlined 5 Geckos Freeze to Death on Sex Space Mission. However, since that incident, new information has come to light. The Space Gecko Project, which is myself, Grant Robertson, and Lewis Gillis, have come into possession of the diary of one of those geckos on that ill-fated, yet crucially romantic trip to space. And the diary basically proves that it was no sex mission because 2 of the geckos were deeply in love. And basically our show tells, with full musical backing and visuals, the story from one of those geckos from his birth to their meeting in high school. They fall in love, kind of go away, get dead-end jobs, apply for the Space Gecko Academy, thankfully get in, or else they wouldn't have been a project. And then in the final poem, they unfortunately go to space and die, but in a crucially romantic way.
Spoiler alerts.
I guess you find that out in the first sentence, so I never feel too bad about spoiling.
Because that's, you have to realize that is a fairly odd subject matter for a show.
Absolutely. But the way I always look at it, because I get a lot of, particularly from people who haven't seen me perform before or who look at me like I'm a bit crazy when I describe that. One of my favorite films, strangely, is Ratatouille. It's just a really good film, right? Yeah. But that's a film about a rat trying to be a chef in Paris.
Which again is an odd premise.
It is. Yeah. So like pretty much a lot of Pixar films in particular are entirely bizarre. But everyone, like, if it's told properly, you get right on board with it. Like, you want that rat to become a chef.
I like the idea of you being the Pixar of the poetry scene.
I think it's a high praise, but I'll leave that to others.
Do you know a poet called Marianne McCrae?
I do know Marianne, yes. I think I've only seen her perform a couple of times.
Marianne's tremendous. I think you'd really like her. Weirdly, because we're going to talk about your sort of picks later on. But one of them, it makes sense that you like Ratatouille so much because you've picked a movie that kind of relies on, anthropomorphized animals.
Yeah.
And so, like, Marianne McCrae did her PhD in animal voice poetry.
Oh, amazing.
So she wrote poetry from the point of view of animals or about animals. And it's all her stuff for, like, the past couple of years has been very strange. It's all about,
I didn't know that.
Foxy's plans and things like that. I'm
absolutely going to check that out.
I now desperately want a collaborative piece between you and Marianne. Imagine. That'd be excellent. So when did you first get the idea of the Space Gecko? Is this you?
Yeah, so I guess, as you say, I write in a lot of different formats. So I think one thing that is constant throughout my writing, whether that's kind of journalism or creative writing, which tends to be short stories, or poetry, there tends to be one kind of common theme, is that it is all kind of very tongue-in-cheek or pun-based or I wouldn't say self-deprecating, because I think that can almost be like, it's a term that can be a bit of a crutch at times.
But there's a humor and a lightness to your work.
Yeah. So I think there's that that kind of follows them through all of them, even if the subject matters are kind of fiercely different. So from Lifeguards, the writing in Lifeguards maybe isn't a million miles away from Geckos. It's just the topic is so kind of vastly different.
Yeah.
And it's actually a different format of writing. It's poetry rather than a comedy duologue. I think there's kind of been that natural progression of I don't find it difficult to write in maybe any format just because I've got my style and I kind of stick to it. To get on to Geckos, I actually started with I remember seeing that headline on Twitter, actually.
Twitter, the great fount of knowledge that it is.
And at the time, I tweeted out, I think it got like one like or something, but I tweeted out a picture of this headline, which was 5 Geckos Freeze to Death and 6 Space Mission. And I tweeted out with the line, I know that you're cold-blooded, but you make my heart feel warm. Which obviously went on to be like in the final poem, and
I like that one like on Twitter was enough for you to write an entire show.
Absolutely, validation. Yeah, it's probably my dad's annual log on to Twitter or something. Yeah.
One person is behind this idea. We're on board. We're going.
Yeah. So, but I remember just being absolutely kind of caught up by that idea. I think for poetry, it's something that I really like writing. That kind of the stuff that makes people feel good when they leave the crowd. I love the thing about the Gecko project that I love most, I guess, is that it's a real kind of feel good piece.
Yeah.
And there is some stuff in there that's kind of, there's like some issues that you could, if you like analyzed it, kind of come out of there, like even stuff like deforestation, I guess, which we'll talk about a bit later on.
Yeah.
But like, it's all mentioned again, like we were kind of careful to not shove anything in anyone's face.
There are bigger subjects in it, like you said. There, you know, you're talking about, you know, death. You're talking about love. You're talking about aspiration and ambition. But like at the root of it is a very basic story about two geckos who just want to get on and have a nice life.
Yeah,
and be together.
It's essentially a love story.
Yeah, there's a kind of I'd be interested to get your opinion, actually, because I know you probably attend more spoken word events than anyone else in the city.
Yeah, I try to go to a lot, I'm here.
Anything I'm ever at, Stuart is always there. It's terrific. I remember seeing adverts for Gilded Balloons program, and there was a picture of Stuart in their advertisement in the audience, and I was just like, how is he at everything? So you have like a pretty good knowledge base of what's going on in the scene. And I often think, considering your particular style being so kind of upbeat, and you know the words you get thrown at you are like happy, wholesome, funny, like that it must be interesting for you being also a fan of the scene, where so much of it is, you know, spoken word is often used as an expression of trauma or of sort of social justice issues or identity issues or, you know, anything like that, where it's kind of rooted in politics and movement based issues, whereas like what you do in your personal writing is kind of steer clear of that a bit. How do you find going along to it where that's the kind of majority?
So I mean, in a way I really actually enjoy that, and I guess part of the reason that I personally don't write that kind of stuff is that other people are basically doing it a lot better than I would if I tried to do that stuff. Like I don't feel like I've got a great poem about, say, like anti-racism, and there's that kind of Kevin Gilday line about I'm glad we've solved racism, and I think like if I was to write a poem about anti-racism, it would end up being generic. It would end up like, so what I would rather do in that case, I would rather direct you to someone like Joe with the glasses or someone
who's
a very, very good writer on important subjects like this.
I did a gig last night. It was for Litsoc, and the theme, because the next day today that we're recording this is International Women's Day. And so he kept the guy that was hosting at kind of intervals would like ask people in the audience what International Women's Day meant to them. And he did a big round of this. So lots of women were kind of voicing their opinion on what it meant. And then he introduced me to the stage. And I was like, great, in-depth discussion about what it is to be a woman and what that day means to you. And then introduced the straight white guy.
Yeah.
I have nothing to say on this subject. And people clapped because I was like, I know enough to be silent now.
Yeah.
I get your point on the...
So I think what's really interesting about the poetry scene, though, is that as still like a relative newcomer, I still remember basically I think I first heard poetry at Hidden Door in 2016. And then,
just for people listening, Hidden Door is an amazing festival that runs in Edinburgh. It runs every year, and what they do is they reclaim a disused space and turn it into a kind of week-long beautiful festival of multi-art, you know, forms.
Yeah, so I've always been, I love Hidden Door. It's probably, it was one of my favourite weeks of the year. It's one of the best times to be in Edinburgh. They call it, some people say it's kind of like the fringe, but for people, the fringe, but for people, or it actually benefits people who live in Edinburgh.
For people in Leith.
But I remember going along there and hearing some spoken word, and then going to the fringe and kind of seeing, in particular, Harry and Chris, who I know you've had on the show and who are great, who are a big inspiration for me, I'm sure you can probably tell. In a lot of the kind of wholesomeness and the puns, but then actually coming back and getting properly involved in the scene, I think as someone who hadn't been in the poetry scene, I would consider myself a very liberal person, and I have a lot of kind of strong opinions about basically a lot of stuff that is very now commonplace in the poetry scene.
It's a pretty left-wing scene.
Yeah, exactly. So, but before I kind of came to that, there was a lot of stuff that I would say I hadn't been exposed to at all. I've just met a lot more people who talk about stuff that I would never have thought about. Transgender poetry and gay poetry and poetry from people of color.
Because if those people aren't necessarily in your immediate life, you don't hear that, you know, you don't hear the sort of firsthand accounting of those issues. So it's a good thing.
And I think there does tend to be a lot of poetry that addresses really important issues in those areas, and that would have been stuff that I had never really come across before. So I think almost part of the reason I enjoy going to so many poetry nights is that, especially when I started, I learnt so much very quickly.
It's the biggest bit of advice I always give to new people when they're like, what should I be doing to get better? And it's like, go to nights, go and see as many other poets as you can.
To an extent, I still think I get that from going to mic nights and stuff.
Do you find it difficult when you're on a bill kind of going up after someone who has maybe done something quite heavy or quite, you know, sort of like issue focused, and then if you're getting up to do something, you know, maybe from the Gecko Project or whatever, where it's, you know, a bit pun based and tongue in cheek? And
I definitely don't mind it, no, because I love listening to people who are really passionate about their cause and who deal with it really well. I actually think sometimes I'm perhaps booked to kind of, I don't know, lighten the mood at points or something like that.
A strategically placed Stuart Kenny for when the mood meets Brighton.
Because, I think my poetry is definitely still rooted in kind of left-wing stuff, but that's not, I guess that's like, that just shines through and that's kind of my beliefs and they come through in the writing. It's not the premise of the poem, normally.
Like in
Gecko, as I kind of made sure, because it's written from the perspective of the male Gecko, I kind of did make sure throughout that if you actually look at the relationship between the male Gecko and the woman Gecko,
it's a fairly healthy relationship.
It's a healthy relationship. She is, if anything, he's a bit of a sad little boy, and she is kind of the powerful, kind of very confident, determined, encouraging, and inspirational Gecko that kind of pulls him through some of his grief and kind of gets him back on track to follow his dreams and all this kind of stuff.
So if you want a psychoanalytical look into Stuart Kenny's life, come and see the Space Gecko Project.
God, yeah.
Do you think that, are you the Gecko, Stuart?
Oh God, at times I think I'm definitely the Gecko, yeah. There's a lot of me in the Gecko, and there's a lot of not me in the Gecko as well. Yeah.
How do you find working with music? Because I know that's a thing that we've obviously used quite a lot, and there has been varying opinion from poets when they come to our shows of, oh God, please don't make me work with a musician, to, oh, that's really exciting. Like, is that something you had a lot of experience in of doing music, or?
No, so not at all, really. That was the first time that I'd ever done it, was with Grant for the Gecko Project. So me and Grant lived together, and I guess it was natural. He's been involved in music for a long time. So I guess it was natural when I got involved in poetry that eventually they would come together. We'd done maybe one or two open mic nights really early on where Grant played the guitar while I did some poetry. And that would have been at kind of not typical poetry venues, actually. We used to go to, is it called the Dog House on Nicholson Street?
Oh, I don't even know that.
So it's...
Mark is nodding furiously at the doghouse. Mark is an alcoholic, so it's like take his opinion.
Yeah, it's a bar where there's a big bulldog. He's very nice. He kind of walks around. But we used to go there, and we used to it was a musical open mic night, and we used to do some poetry, which used to divide audiences, as you can imagine.
It's so funny. I was saying this gig I was at last night, a couple of musicians got up to do a spot, and I was like, no one minded. And I'm only at a poetry night. We're here to see poems. Oh, a musician, that'll be fun. Whereas you do the reverse at a music open mic night and get up to do some poems and watch people not be so nice.
Yeah, I think without Grant there, it would have been somewhat of a disaster. But what I found is that you always got, I'm sure you know this from the amount of people that you get in, kind of a lot of people discover poetry through Loud Poets, is that you always get someone when they hear a poet and when they hear this spoken word and this kind of performance style in particular, who does think like, wow, that was cool. So I used to get quite a lot of that. And then obviously you get a lot of people that just completely ignore you. But we did it there.
But those one or two that come through and go like, I'd never seen anything like this before. This is really cool. I want to find more of it. That's enough. You know, out of like a reasonably sized audience, if I get one or two people that do that, I'm happy.
Exactly. It inspires you to keep going and do more. And we used to do there, and we used to do Henry's Cellar Bar on Monday nights.
Yeah,
and then kind of as you get more into the poetry scene, you realize that there are actual places that you should go instead of that where poetry isn't so odd. And now I would be a bit scared to kind of go to an open mic night with a...
Yeah.
So...
It's that thing when you don't know, you just kind of start looking for things to do. But then when you're in the scene, there's a bit of a comfort to knowing, oh, I can go to the place where the audience are expecting poems.
Yeah.
How did you find our Bohemia event? Because that's obviously a bit of a mash of those two things.
It was interesting. Yes, it's a hell of a stage.
Yeah. Like, basically at Bohemia, we have people who are there to see our show, but we also have people who are there just in to have dinner who don't know poems are about to happen.
Yeah. And I think that was notable. And you could tell that it did split the crowd who weren't there for the poetry. But that was quite cool in a way, because I think some people left, but the others who kind of stayed the whole time actually like came up and chatted after and were saying how much they enjoyed it and asking us about the show and that kind of stuff. So again, it's possibly a really good way to get people into poetry by sabotaging their night.
If you want an audience that is going to listen respectfully and quietly to you, you're going to need people who know how poetry nights work. If you want a new audience, you're going to maybe have to accept that you're going to have to make them listen. I quite like gigs like that. Like, it's interesting because I think we had maybe quite a similar into it, where I'm not really phased by gigs now. I'm like, I get nervous, and obviously, but I'm never like fazed by an audience, because I did open mics when I kicked off. So I was like, yeah, people literally booed me through the whole poem. So you not paying attention isn't really going to hurt me.
No, that's it. Yeah. It's a nice space though as well. That's super beautiful nice stage. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. Right, to bring it back to your original, I keep on going massive tangents here.
That's a talk podcast. About the music. Tangents are good. We're allowed.
So to talk about the music, yeah, I think it was natural that me and Grant would end up working together on music. And the way, I guess, most of the poems were written before the music for Space Gecko. So how it actually started was that I saw that headline. I wrote that single poem that ended it.
Right, yeah.
So I wrote the final poem.
The closing piece of that show was beautiful.
And it was just, that started as just a standalone poem. And then I basically performed that at a few open mic nights. And I realized that that's kind of exactly the kind of stuff that I really like writing, that makes me really happy. Because I do have a few poems that are kind of more kind of nose on the head left wing a bit, which talk a bit more about politics. But again, I'm just like, in my head, there are a lot of people who are a lot better than me at doing that.
Yeah.
And I do wonder sometimes how much I have to add on that kind of in that area. Whereas one thing that I do think that I have is a very big imagination, and I really like kind of taking these kind of stories and creating little worlds around them. So we did that, and that poem just went down super well. I remember doing it at Boomerang in London, and I remember run by Tyrone Lewis and the Repeat Beat Poet.
And
if you're in London, go along. But I remember kind of my time slot ran out, and there were some people in the audience who kind of wouldn't let me stop because they wanted to know what happened at the end. And then performed it back in Edinburgh and got really kind of, people loved it. And what would happen is that I would send the poems to Grant. Once we realized that we were doing this project, I would send them to Grant, and he would kind of ask, what kind of tone do you want this to be in, or something like that. And I would basically give a very, very vague description or something. So for like the third one, I was like, what if this is a Western? And he's kind of brought in this harmonica and a really kind of nice style. And he would come back to me with like, what about this? And I'd be like, amazing. So like the second song, the one with the herbivore pun about high school. That's actually loosely based on a Taylor Swift song.
Nice.
Whereas you've got number six, which is kind of my inspirations behind that one, were more kind of Nick Cavey, more typical poetry. So I would, it does kind of vastly differ.
Yeah.
I remember for the first one coming in to the flat one day and being like, Grant, I had an idea for this one. And it's like, do, 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 do. And then him looking at me and actually like saying like, okay, rather than you've lost your mind
person. Yeah.
Yeah. So Grant's been absolutely amazing. And he actually bought and learnt how to use a loop pedal for the show.
Wow.
So before that he played guitar, but he bought his loop pedal kind of, I'm not sure if he learnt how to play harmonica, but he certainly doesn't do it often. So he got a harmonica, he got a glockenspiel. I was very keen to get a glockenspiel.
Nice, nice.
He got all sorts of instruments. There's this thing called a melodica, which is like a keyboard that goes in your mouth.
Melodicas are ace, yeah.
And yeah,
Mark has rage about melodicas because he bought Sam one to take on tour so he could stop moaning, and then he never ever did.
Disaster.
And Mark's very angry.
But yeah, so basically Grant learned how to do all this, and it basically just came together very naturally. I think we just have quite similar understandings of the material. And then where Lewis's artwork tied in, so one of the reasons I'm really excited about the Storytelling Center is because at the Labyrinth, basically I was always slightly in the way of the projection.
Yeah,
whereas at the Storytelling Center they have this massive screen which will be above my head and give Lewis his art the kind of credit and visibility it deserves, because basically I would send him the poems as well, and he lives in London, so he would work completely independent of us. But me and Lewis have a very similarly wholesome and childish approach to the world, I guess. Like,
nice.
So Lewis's artwork is very wholesome and fits the, you've seen the artwork.
Yeah,
and
I think it's stunning stuff.
I think it just fits the project so, and it adds, I think the three of them combine to really make a kind of, you can ask why you would care about geckos, and the poems are one thing. I don't actually like performing the poems without Grant that much anymore, just because the music adds so much to it.
Yeah.
And then when you bring, it's just another emotion, isn't it? And then when you bring the artwork in, it's really just a kind of a whole thing.
They all help to amplify each other. That's the thing. Like that I've always noticed is those illustrations would be good by themselves, but with those poems and the narrative of the show, it adds to the illustration, you know. So it's like you get those three parts. I think it's nice when you find people that not only are very talented at what they do, but get the same mindset as you, like you're saying about Lewis. Like those illustrations feel to your story, you know, they feel like they're made for that specific story.
Yeah,
they capture
it's great story. And I think it's just a result of just having been friends and known each other for so long and just having like similar kind of senses of humor and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's nice, for example, at the end of the project, kind of, we hope that there's kind of not a dry eye in the house by the time the poem's finished, but the poem actually finishes, the final poem finishes maybe about 30 seconds before the actual end of the project. No spoilers on what else happens, but it's kind of a very dramatic close just to seal that kind of, get those tears going, get those hearts melting. It just kind of leaves people just going, aw.
Yeah.
And it's kind of, it's funny because obviously it's about geckos, so no one expects to be upset by it.
Yeah, you don't expect it to affect you. You don't expect to get invested in the relationship between two geckos that you cannot see other than an illustration. You know what I mean?
Like, exactly,
it's a very strange.
So then basically we're looking at our show for next time, and we actually, someone at Hidden Door actually came up to me after one of the open mic nights I did and kind of asked if we wanted to submit, if we had a show that we could submit to Hidden Door. And at that point, I'd never written a poetry show, but I was like absolutely in love with this idea of...
You said yes and then figured you'd figure it out, didn't you?
Kind of, yeah. So like, well, we still had to obviously write it and then submit it. But we wrote this, so I kind of worked backwards from that endpoint. I thought what was really nice is that I think I found it quite an easy project to write because I knew the journey that they were going to go on. We had the endpoint and
yeah,
just had to work from there. And
I
just wanted to be that kind of like, it's almost, I think it was Ricky Brown from Interrobang. He came along and he kind of said to me after, you've kind of taken on board and distilled pretty much all of popular culture and then just packed it down into kind of a digestible fashion and made it about geckos. And I think that's actually quite a good description someday. It's very, we draw on obviously a lot of cliches, a lot of stereotypes. The high school poem is kind of heavily based on kind of high school cliches from America in particular.
I think that's a good idea, though, because you want people to have, you know, kind of signposts for to be able to go along with something as strange as geckos going to space.
So. Yeah, and then there's, like, weirdly some relatable stuff in there. I think there's, like, they go job hunting and they get kind of pretty boring jobs for a while, and that bit's mostly told through puns, but it's kind of like everyone knows what you're talking
hands
about.
Hands down, there's so many puns, so I don't feel too bad spoiling it. My favorite pun in the whole thing is geckos are supposed to be carnivorous. Oh yeah, they're eating a salad. Sorry, they're eating a salad, and it's you do the never seen anything like herbivore.
So she's apologizing for her boyfriend. Yeah, she apologizes for her boyfriend as she walks down the corridor. She digs into his salad and admits she needs to show him the door. And yeah, I'm well aware that geckos are actually all carnivores, but it's not the salad that needs addressing. I've never seen anything like herbivore.
It's too much. Oh, it broke me.
I love that herbivore pun so much. I remember tweeting that out and being like, just like laughing to myself.
And if people can't come and see it, you guys are working on a way for people that can't see it live to catch up on, right?
Yes, so anyone who buys a ticket for the Space Gecko Project on the 29th at Storytelling Centre will get a free album. We also hope to be able to distribute that album elsewhere. Hopefully it'll go online somewhere, just because it's the last time that we'll perform it in Edinburgh for sure. We've also got a Glasgow date coming up on 6th of April, which the venue's not been announced yet, but stay tuned on that. But yeah, basically when we say we've been making an album, what I really mean is Grant's been making an album. He kind of occasionally calls me and is like, Stuart, can you do vocals on this? And then he goes kind of into the living room with masses of equipment that I don't understand and works his magic. He's doing so much good work on that. And it's kind of a full band feel to it. And he's a very, very talented man.
Nice. Well, we're excited to hear that when we get... We're all coming to see the Space Gecko Project, so we'll be getting free CDs. But we will catch you up on how it went. And when CDs come out and stuff, we will be letting people know on our social medias. Where can people catch up with you on social media, Stuart?
So I'm on Facebook at Stuart Kenny Writer, and on Twitter just as at Stuart Kenny.
So yeah, if you want to come and catch some beautiful puns, the wonderful love story of two starstruck geckos going into outer space, then please come along to the Scottish Storytelling Centre on the 29th of March. You can get your tickets in advance at the Scottish Storytelling Centre box office or on their website, or if you find Stuart at one of the many poetry nights he's sure to be at between now and then, you can get tickets from him in person. So absolutely check that out.
Yes, yes, please do.
But if you're looking for a little sneak peek of that, we're very happy to be able to bring you a little track from the Space Gecko Project. So enjoy that. We'll see you on the other side.
I used to trace the lit up lines of Orion's belt that spun slowly above my bed. A reminder to forget the monsters when I went to sleep at night and dream of stars instead. Mum, who's Orion? And why is his belt in the sky? How come I can see it every night? And how come every time I try and get that high, I climb up to the treetops, way above the forest floor? But Orion's belt just seems as far away as it did before. My mother bursts out into laughter. I don't see the laughing matter. But it's then her eyes grow wide as she provides me with an answer. Says Orion was a space commander, charged with keeping up the standards of the constellation rulers from Sagittarius to Cancer. He was always inundated, getting bad guys incarcerated. Cut his tracks and he just come back, like the tail of a salamander. Or so the story goes. Then she put her finger to my nose. I still remember there was snow, falling gently on the window outside like goodbye kisses, landing on the frost and fading into thin air. But what about the belt? I belted out. How did Orion's belt get way up there? Brush your teeth and get in bed, Mum said, gently squeezing my little gecko head. And I'll explain the whole affair. Colgate! 9 minutes later, we were back in full flow, forging folklore of the space war between Orion and Pluto. See, Orion said the human race had defaced his name, said they don't think I'm a planet anymore. Well, I'll inflame that whole darn place. I'll crash into Earth head first and wipe out cities with my face. If I was a dwarf planet, could I really unleash such chaos from space? I'll burn down rainforests, bring on Armageddon, and send them into misery. The Amazon's prime target, so I'll even send myself on free next day delivery.
I gasped. The mum asked, "Are you keeping up with the story okay?" I don't know what Armageddon means, I impatiently screamed, but it's not the end of the world. Arma wanting you to get on with the story. My mum let slip that laugh she loves to laugh. And then quickly, we begun.
So every month here on the Loudcast, we ask our special guest that we have in to pick two different videos or sort of movies or something that you guys can check out and watch in your own time to have a chat about. We try and ask them to pick something that's inspired them or something they really enjoy. And this month, we have a weekly show, so I'm confused. This month, we have Stuart Kenny with us, and he has picked his two choices that you will get to pick on social media for which one you hear in this Loudcast. I get very confused at this point about the tenses, but that will have all made sense by the time you're listening to this. So the two things that Stuart has picked is Sheehan, Lovelike, which is a poem by an amazing spoken word artist, American guy from Def Jam Poetry, and he has picked Pompoko, which is a Studio Ghibli film, which I don't know a lot about Studio Ghibli. I've not seen huge amounts of it. This one affected me. So we will be talking about both of those. One of them will go into this Loudcast that you're hearing. If you want to hear the description of the other one, I was chatting about both of them, you can go over to the I Am Loud Patreon page and you can sign up there and you'll get all the extra podcast goodness that you're after. So this is the bit where I get confused about what to introduce to see how Mark edits it. So I'm going to go first for Sheehan, Lovelike.
From Los Angeles, by way of Lower East Side, Sheehan.
So, Stuart, why did you pick Sheehan?
So, I think Sheehan, it was someone that I came to very early in my poetry career. Maybe even like one of the first poems that I saw that got me properly interested in it. And in particular in the performance side as well. I think he made me understand the spoken word poetry scene a lot better. Just because, for example, this poem, I'm not even sure there's a single rhyme in it, but some of the wordplay is just amazing.
It still feels incredibly rhythmic.
Yeah, it's incredibly rhythmic. The wordplay is fantastic. There's lots of really clever repetition and alliteration. And it kind of just makes you feel really happy at the end of it. It's just like it's a really beautiful poem. And watching him perform it, I find so entertaining. I thought it was such an entertaining performance. So I think it was the first poem that I came to in spoken word that was kind of like that. It was just energetic, really upbeat and positive, and just kind of got you really excited as well. Like, there's a lot of different sides to poetry, and that's what I like about Sheehan, kind of growing on from that and then I went to explore his other poems, and he is almost just everything that I find really interesting about poetry. He's got that side where he can just talk about love, he can talk about his family, and effectively just having just really nice stuff that means a lot to people, but then he's got some very in-depth poems about a lot more serious matters, and he explores them in very clever ways, and with I think there are few people that I've heard that are better than him at wordplay and
For those that don't know Sheehan, I don't know about you, Stuart, but the first place I'd sort of seen him was watching old Def Jam Poetry videos on YouTube.
Same with me.
So if you've not checked out Def Jam Poetry, you absolutely have to. So Mos Def put together and hosted this like incredible run. It was like 6 seasons, I think it got on HBO.
More than that. I think it was 9 or something.
I think Sheehan, I was reading up about him, I think he's only done 6 of the seasons as a regular. But like they ran for ages, and just every top class spoken word poet in America has like been on. Like when you go through the list and it's like Saul Williams and Taylor Mahle and Gemini and Bosea. Just gets
the last
ridiculous.
Poet. Even I think Kanye West was on it 3
Kanye
times.
Kanye did it.
A bunch of
very surreal to see.
There was a very famous comedian who did it. Dave Chappelle, I think, did it.
Chappelle did do it actually.
But anyway, so it's just brilliant. And you're right. I was watching that and I kind of came across him, and that just absolutely stood out to me. On so many levels.
It's that thing of, I think sometimes love poetry gets like a bad reputation. People seem to see it as like an easy thing to write about.
Yes, I actually wanted to bring this up with you because you famously once said or often say that there is no such thing as a love poem. This is just a love poem.
No, that's my point. So often I give an intro, which is a kind of, because I have a lot of love poems.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
Which I think is a thing. I think when people start writing, they write a lot of love poems because that's a thing everyone gets, right? Everyone knows what it's like to love or to be loved, right?
I hope so.
Yeah, it's that one universal that you think you can lay over to everyone. So I think that's why people write that. I think it's why especially straight white male poets write that, because as we talked about before, when you're looking at issue poetry, we don't kind of have that. It's not our place to talk about some of those things. So we talk about love poems, and often they get a bad reputation. So my often repeated sort of line in the set is I go, a lot of people talk about, so this is a love poem. Well, it's not really a love poem. It's more of an anti-love poem. And I don't get that term, because what love poem is just like straight up happy and nice, which you may have undercut.
There could be the exception that proves the rule, perhaps.
Yeah, maybe.
I thought when I wrote that seventh gecko poem as well, I thought, like, is this a straight up love poem? And I was like, Stuart, it's about geckos going to space and dying. It's not straight up. Kind of like, there's a bit of a twist at least on that. But it's just a beautiful poem, this, isn't it? I think
it's so nice. I mean, I like I said, I write a lot of poems, and I sometimes it's hard to convey such a big topic, the complex feelings of being in love with someone, and the variance and nuance of what that can feel like. Whereas Sheehan, even the ones that don't apply to me in that poem, so it's essentially, it works as a kind of list poem in a way. It's I want to love like, and then he'll give you a descriptor of his barometer for what true love is. And it could be like, I want to love like, maybe cut off all my hair. Okay, maybe not all my hair, but maybe just split ends. Like, and it's that thing of what he's willing to do for love. My favorite bit, and it's the line is that it builds up to, is the I want to go to a different country, get hit by a car, get amnesia, wake up not remembering anything, and see if I can fall in love with you in another language type love. And you're just like,
it's fantastic. And I just learned a lot from that one performance about comedic timing in poems, about structure, or it really, maybe didn't learn these things, but it just really got me interested in so many different parts. And when you actually look at it, if you look at it on paper, I've read an interview with Sheehan where he says this actually, if you look at it on paper, it's a pretty simple poem, but he's just, again, that almost adds another level to the video because he's so good at performing it. And I think that got, I'm quite like an energetic performer, I would say, so I was really interested in that side of things. And then,
but the thing is, you see energetic people, you would consider energetic performers in like Scotland or the UK, but then you compare them to the Def Jam poets.
Oh god, yeah, I mean,
and it's night and day. Like, that's real performance poetry. Some of the
next level
movement and just energy on that stage is incredible.
Yeah, just absolute experts. I guess that's why so many people watch that, is that we all aspire to.
I think there's a thing of the, it's that perfect storm of, they have a beautiful venue for that, for the series. And then they have incredible poets, a wonderful host. But one of the things that really makes all those Def Jam poetry videos for me is the audiences.
Mm.
They're so vocal and so like engaged and keen for the poets to do and be good. I don't know. There's just this really intense vibe. I know it doesn't run anymore, but I wish I had.
Oh, I wish it did still run as well. And you wish.
I think there's been rumors lately that it might be coming back, that someone's trying to put it together again, which I would love to see, because.
Yeah. So I think Sheehan actually holds the record for the most appearances on that show.
Really?
That might be wrong, but I'm pretty sure that's
not
true.
Not surprising. Have you seen his collab poem with Poetry and Black Ice?
So, yes, I have seen it quite a while ago, because I've seen both of them live, which we'll get onto
men.
Shortly. But yeah, it's like, even in. In structural timing and kind of duet poems,
to be able to play off other people, because that's I think an undervalued skill in poetry is collab stuff. I know it's like very prominent in the North American scene.
Okay,
you know, when you go to slams and stuff, there will be, you know, team poems and things like that. So they do it a lot, and you see that in the Def Jam poetry through, you know, We Are Men is an excellent example. You don't see it a lot here. Like, we've done a lot of, you know, collab poems historically and loud poets, but like it's not something that catches on. Do you think it might be something you take up?
I don't think it would be for me.
No?
Personally, no. I enjoy watching them, and I've written a kind of, been to a few workshops and written a couple of collab poems that I really enjoyed doing. But I think for me, what I really enjoy is kind of creating worlds and yeah, kind of transporting people to that world, but also it's as much for my own kind of enjoyment of creating this silly stuff. And I think I really enjoy collaborating with people and with Grant and Lewis, but on an actual poem, and I'm not sure I would be that good at it. Right. I'm not sure how it would work. I wouldn't rule it out, obviously, but
yeah, it's an interesting thing to do, and it's a weird writing style to go through, because like obviously with Gecko, you're like, you can take your piece and you can give it to someone and they can add, you know, something to it, whereas with collaborative poetry writing, it has to be kind of written at the same time.
So obviously you've done a lot. How have you found it historically compared to writing individual poems? Because you've done a good bit of it.
I really enjoy it. I weirdly find it easier because when I get stuck, you have another poet to help.
Okay, yeah.
Whereas if you're by yourself, you're just kind of trapped, banging your head against a wall. Mm. But it's something that I see that I think comes out of that kind of vein of performance poetry, where because when you have guys like Sheehan and the sort of Def Jam guys, you have... what they do so well is that kind of little basic narrative thing, and they do very good strong performance structure. Mm. And so you're like, when you add range to what you can do with that, when you add other people in, because then you can make it more conversational at points. You can, you know, emphasize lines with multiple voice. Yeah. You can interrupt and cut over each other. You can chorus, or you can round, or you can like, so it gives you a lot of scope to be able to do extra stuff.
Yeah. And that's super cool.
Let's write a collab poem. Sure.
Oh God. Yeah, maybe.
Not now.
Not right now. Yeah, by the end of the show, we'll perform it. Yeah. I think what I love about this poem is about Sheehan. You can show this poem to anyone, whether they've never seen poetry before in their life, and if they've been in the scene for years. If they've been in the scene for years, they've probably already seen it. But like, it's just, for me, it was one of the early ones I came to. I learned so much from it and kind of became a big Sheehan fan.
Yeah.
So I travel a lot in my journalism. I work as a travel journalist. So I'm lucky enough to kind of occasionally just be able to kind of take off and be like, I'll go to Amsterdam for a few weeks. So
ideal.
So a few years ago, I think it was 2017, I went to Amsterdam for 2 weeks. And while there, I actually had a bit of like a Def Jam tour, because I got to see...
in Amsterdam.
Mos Def was playing in Amsterdam.
Wow.
And I got to see Mos Def, which was incredible. He spins in circles a lot when he performs. And nice. Then the next day, there was a poetry night in Rotterdam, which is about an hour away from Amsterdam.
There's actually a lot of stuff in Rotterdam. Poetry really? International runs out of Rotterdam. I met a guy called Bas Quackman,
great
name.
That is a great name.
Who like runs Poetry International. And they're trying to set up, I think, like a Rotterdam Poetry Festival
as
well.
Oh, wow, yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, that was one of the best events I ever went to be honest. So when basically I had to get to Rotterdam, I thought, apparently it's much more common to hitchhike in the Netherlands.
Oh, right.
So I made a sign that said, Rotterdam. And then just went and they have these designated spots where you go and stand to hitchhike. So I went to one, stuck out my thumb, and within about 10 minutes got picked up by this guy, a graphic designer, who he was fine. He didn't kill me. so that was a bonus.
Good.
My mom was less than happy at my hitchhiking antics, I must say. So, but yeah, got to Rotterdam and then went to the show, and Sheehan was the kind of the feature, the main man, but there were some other amazing performers as well. But basically, I'll never forget the entrance to this poetry night, because it started with this singer coming out and these interpretive dancers behind her. And it was in a full, like, maybe 200-person theater or something.
Nice.
And I just remember watching, like, is this what poetry events are like in the Netherlands? This is madness. But like speaking to him after, and he loved that I had hitchhiked.
You got to meet
there.
Him.
So I mean, he was just, nice. It's like poetry, isn't it? They're all just hanging about. Like
even famous poets aren't famous.
Yeah, I think that's like one of the, when I remember first getting involved in the scene, and like even people in the Edinburgh scene, you're like, oh, they're like so good. And then they're like at the bar after, and you're like, oh, and then you know them, like you're good friends with them, like 3 months
nothing.
Later or something. No. harsh. But yeah, so he was just like a super nice guy, and yeah, it was just a great experience. I think just that whole experience, I find a lot of my kind of poetry inspiration rooted back to Sheehan.
So yeah, what was he saying when you told him you'd hitchhiked?
He was just like, he was really surprised, because I mean, I was from Scotland as well, so it was kind of like, I think there was various things about the fact of my being there that kind of just shocked him. But he was just it was super.
I like that though, when, you know, because we look at people like Sheehan, and obviously if you're getting into a scene and that's some of the early stuff you hear, and you know it was on HBO and stuff,
yeah.
Like, this dude must be like a big deal. And then he's super touched by people coming a long way to see his shows. And it doesn't leave you that kind of stuff, I don't think, in the poetry scene.
Yeah. He'd shaved his head by this point as well. So he changed the line in that poem. It was like, I can't quite remember. It was
because you used to do, made me want to cut off all my hair.
Yeah, so basically, I want that kind of love that I would cut off all my hair for. And he's like, oh, I've done it, kind of thing. But you can, he's obviously such a good performer.
He also runs, I know, which is something I'm keen to go out and check. We're hoping to get to the States through a project that we're working on at the minute. And part of that project was kind of checking out poetry events there. And one of them I really want to check out is, and I sound so white saying this, Da Poetry Lounge. Because it's the world's largest open mic.
I've seen pictures of it on his page. It looks amazing. It looks like another
stunning
world, doesn't
it? And the fact that he's hosting that every does it run weekly, I think? Is it weekly or monthly? I can't remember.
No idea,
but it runs like bizarrely regularly. Mm. And so I really want to go out and do the world's largest open mic, because I think that'd be incredibly
cool. That would be fantastic.
But yeah, Sheehan's amazing. So if you haven't checked out Sheehan, go and check out, first check out Love Like, but then go and check out all of his stuff. I know Sick and Tired makes me just break. So that last line, I'm sick and tired of people trying to get into the entertainment industry, because sooner or later, there'll be no audience, just a bunch of monkeys on stage dancing.
Yeah,
and that's like the last line. You're like,
is that, and then he's got Flashy Words, I think, is another one. Is that the one where there's a big amount of audience?
Yeah, Flashy Words make the world turn, but it don't turn right.
Yeah. He's got so many different levels.
The thing is, I've seen so many British poets try and do audience reaction. When I lift my hand, you've got to say this. And they lift the hand and you can see everyone go, we absolutely don't.
The most...
That only works. He does it once. He's like, when I go like this, you say what, all right? And he throws his hand up, whole audience, say what?
Well, we'll give a huge shout out to Davy Cunningham. Have you seen him before? He's a regular Inky Fingers.
I don't know that.
So he's a poet. He's been on the poetry scene for quite a long time.
Right.
But basically he came up and did this at Inky, did this kind of poem with audience participation about the train line to Malig, I think it was. And basically he gave Freddie Alexander this train whistle, and anytime Freddie blew it, everyone in the audience had to go choo choo. And this is perhaps the white version.
I could be that. We had Toby Campion in an LP, and he does this poem about us being in the waiting room of a sexual health clinic, but it's actually a series of short poems. So he connects them by having the audience do an awkward cough every time he gestures.
Oh man, yeah, that's clever.
It's brilliant. Yeah, yeah. So he's like, he'll finish off one of the little verses and then gesture, and everyone just goes, which is
excellent. Yeah.
So beautiful. You can see that on the I Am Loud YouTube page, actually. So check out that after you've went and seen some Sheehan. So we have a segment every month, which is by far my favorite segment. We get to find out way more in 3 minutes about our guest than I managed to find out in a rambling hour interview. So we are going to cut to that now with Stuart Kenny. It is time for quick fire questions. Are you ready for quick fire questions, Stuart?
Let's do it.
Sounding confident.
Yeah,
sounding
confident. Gosh. Well, we'll see.
That plummeted quickly. That went from absolute confidence to no, I'm not
Do
sure.
Do poets have confidence?
That's
another question for another podcast, day. That's not one of the quickfire questions.
Okay, Mark is going to have 3 minutes on the clock for us, and the time will start when I start reading the first question. Favorite mythical creature?
Unicorn.
Unicorn, nice. Star Wars or Star Trek?
Star Wars, definitely.
Definitely.
Definitely, yeah. Like, yeah. Grew up with it.
Favorite temperature?
Celsius.
not a specific Celsius.
Fahrenheit is too complicated. Yeah. I like cold temperatures. So, like, I don't know, 8 degrees, because that's not too cold.
8 degrees, good. Yeah. Biggest fuck up on stage?
Oh, I did a poetry night in London one time, and I just crumbled because I'd had, like, this is how I learned not to drink beers before I perform. I had like 3 beers and I just forgot all the words and just panicked on stage. And I can't remember what night it was, but the guy who ran it was so nice to me afterwards. And it actually left me with a lot of encouragement for the poetry scene. I think that's the only time
You would turn a fuck up into a wholesome
I think
story.
That's the only time I've properly fucked up on stage. But like, that was, yeah, it was bad.
Do you wear proper pajamas?
No.
No.
I sleep naked.
No one asked that follow-up question, but I'm glad you gave us the info. Least favorite mode of transport?
Cars. I don't like cars. I don't drive. I'm a bike person.
One of those. Do you understand cricket?
Absolutely not.
Weirdest place you've ever woken up?
Oh, gosh. Um, sorry.
Quick fire, Stuart.
It'll be, oh gosh, where it'll be a... Okay, the middle of the Colombian jungle in a hammock, I guess.
To be fair, that was worth the delay. That's pretty impressive. I'm forgetting travel journalist. He's going to have too many to go through. Favorite pizza topping?
Pepperoni.
Smart. Do you watch sports?
Yes, lots.
What's your favorite sport?
Mountain biking. Skiing is what I write about, so.
Nice. Dogs or cats?
Dogs, but I also like cats.
It's an or question. You've ruled out
dogs cats. And cats.
What's your Patronus?
My Patronus? A gecko.
Do you have a pet?
So I don't have a pet, but I've kind of adopted a pet, I guess, in a way. And my girlfriend has a rabbit called Casper, and I have now written a full anthology of poems about Casper. So I think I have a pet.
Jump on Stuart Kenny's Instagram page for some absolutely wonderful stories about
that
rabbit.
I love that rabbit.
Best present you've ever received?
Oh, man. I don't know. It was when I was like 5 years old, my parents gave me a Fisher Price pirate ship, and it was the greatest present ever. It was also the same year. I was very lucky that year. I also got a first bike that year, and that's like, I went on to become a cycling journalist. So that should be what my favorite gift was from that year. There was this like really cheap pirate ship next to it, and I was far more interested in that.
What poem do you wish you'd written?
Oh, I guess the Sheehan one that we talked about earlier.
Nice, nice. And that is us out of time. Good job on the quick firing.
Sorry,
questions.
I'm not very good at quick firing, am I?
I think you got through a bunch there.
Yeah.
That was informative.
Take too long to answer.
No, I think that was pretty good. I think you did well. Okay. I think we've learned a lot about Stuart. Mm. Mostly that you sleep naked. That's going to be the lingering mental image for me. So that was Stuart's quick fire questions. Thank you so much for coming in and having a chat with us, Stuart. We really appreciate it. We hope you had fun.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Good, good. I wish people could see your awesome shirt. It's all I've been looking at for the whole podcast. We'll make sure we put up a photo of Stuart's awesome shirt. If people want to check you out, Stuart, where can they see Space Gecko Project?
So the Space Gecko Project is at Scottish Storytelling Centre on March 29th. And in Edinburgh, that is. And it's going to be in Glasgow on April the 6th. And just stay tuned to my page for more on that.
And where can they follow you on all the social medias?
Twitter at Stuart Kenny, Facebook Stuart Kenny Writer.
Fantastic. So absolutely go give Stuart a follow. Check out all the awesome stuff he's doing. See if he wakes up anywhere stranger than the Colombian jungle. that might not get topped. Absolutely check Stuart's out. Please come and see the Space Gecko Project. We will be there checking it out. It is a phenomenal show. So thank you so much for coming in, Stuart. For us, please do come and check out our next show, Loud Poets Choose Life, at the Storytelling Centre on the 15th of March. While you're in seeing us, you can pick up tickets for Space Gecko Project on the 29th. You can also check us out every week at Bruchemia on Market Street in Edinburgh. If you're interested in signing up, we'd love to hear from you. Hit us up at hello@iamloud.co. You can get in touch for slots. Every act that signs up and reads gets a complimentary drink and then 20% off at the bar. So pretty good deal. It's also a beautiful stage, and Perry should be there to take your photo, so it's a bit of a win. Hit us up if you're interested in signing up for that. Other than that, please go over and check out our Patreon page. Go and check out our brand new website, iamloud.co, and you can also hit us up on all the social medias at iamloudpro or by searching iamloud or loud poets on any of the social medias or YouTube, anything like that. We are all over the internet. We've got a bunch of stuff coming up this month, and I will catch you up on all of that in the Loudcast next month. So thank you so much for listening, and we shall catch you then. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.